The question was asked, we see all kinds of instances where there seem to be actions or positions that are taken up by the Rabbanut with regard to Geirim or potential Geirim that defy our understanding. And the question is, how can we understand this? So I would like to try to deal with this on a few fronts. And I caution in advance that it might be that at the end of our whole discussion, you'll feel that your question hasn't been answered adequately. And that's why the first aspect I want to discuss is the aspect that when we're dealing with a system, when we're dealing with be it a halachic system, be it a legal system, so then sometimes there are positions that the system has to adopt that do not take the individual into account. And even though in halacha we try to take the individual into account as much as we can, there will be instances where our hands are tied because we are dealing with the system. Now, if this system were solely in the hands of the rabbis and they didn't have to worry about political ramifications and they didn't have to worry about the constant ongoing struggle with the political scene to take away the whole validity of gear by really making it a completely secular act, which is what the government has been attempting to do for a long time. So once they're dealing with that kind of situation, so sometimes you have a situation where they have to adopt positions, so to speak, to protect the system, because protecting the system is the most basic thing in order to ensure that at least some people get what's needed. And when we hear about people that got the rough end of the deal, we say, wait a second, how could that happen to them? But we're only seeing our vantage point, which is very real. I'm not going to minimize the real pain and the real suffering of people and the real, from their perspective, they're being treated unfairly. But that doesn't mean that the system has a choice. A lot of what we're seeing is an outcome of the fact that we're dealing with a system that is really not even allowed to function the way it sees fit, this system. Some of the examples which you gave are examples that have nothing to do with the rabbis. The fact that a rabbi will not accept the gear of Beit Din and Beit Har, that's not his decision. That's the court, the government says we want everything to work through us, which is also understandable. But here we're missing the human factor that, like you said, people don't necessarily know what to do when they enter the scene. But the government says, if you're not going to work with us, why should we recognize courts that don't work with us? And that's also understandable. I mean, every other government in the world says the same thing. We have our court, we have our legal system. You want to work with another system, work with that system. What do you want from us? You want us to recognize another court that's not working with us, that doesn't work with our set of laws, and they should be able to do whatever they want. The government's position is also understandable. It's also understandable that there are people that fall in the cracks. But to take the problems and lay them all on the shoulders of the rabbis of the Beit Din, I don't think is fair. So the first point we have to recognize is that we're dealing with the system. And we also have to recognize that there are going to be many calculations that we cannot understand. I'm going to try to share with you a few of the things which you might know, you might not know, about the calculations that this particular system has to contend with. But we have to know that as much as we will understand, there are still a lot of other calculations which we do not understand. And if we're dealing with good people, people who in every other area of life we know them to be kind and caring people, then I think it's fair to give them the benefit of the doubt that there must be other things that we don't know, especially in a system that is so charged where there's every reason to believe that there are issues that we don't know about.
If it's a state Beit Din or a Haredi Beit Din, the viewer doesn't hear any of these stories. So he actually can't choose to take his risks of not getting a visa for 3 years afterwards. If he doesn't know, think one of the two Beit Din or situations is obliged to say what the risks are of Nishot. So that's my issue, what somehow is abuse if you don't have the risk of the political situation.
That's also a little bit complicated. You're saying the Beit Din should inform him of the risks. That's a totally separate question, which I don't mind dealing with, but let's deal with that second. In one sentence, usually we assume if you're going to make a radical change in your life, you should do the research. Meaning, it's true, if I know certain things, I should share them with you. But there's also an aspect where you should do the research. But there's a lot more to be said on this. That's just the beginning. But there's a lot more to be said on it. There's a lot, Shem, we'll try to get to this as well. Let's begin with the fact that there's the government has been trying to change the demographical situation in Israel. The government wants as many people as they can to come here who will balance, in their eyes, they say, the demographical situation with the Arabs. Between the lines, what we think is they want to balance the situation with the Haredi and Dati world. They're not saying that, but that's definitely the impression that you get from what they're doing. The only way they could do that within the legal system is by breaching the gear, because they've really finished bringing anyone they could claim in any form of the imagination as Jewish. So how do you bring more people in when you want to counteract the religious world? You say, we'll call them Jews, we'll make them Jews, what do you care? He wants to live a Jewish lifestyle, what's there to being Jewish, right? In their eyes. The Beit Din has been, for many years, in a situation where they are under constant attack by the media and the government, trying to take their ability to decide who is a ger and who isn't a ger, and they're the only ones that should have that ability. And basically what the Beit Din has been forced to do is bring down the claims and say, okay, no one. Many times the Beit Din had say no one. What are you doing saying no one? You're not a Beit Din in order to say no one. They said no one because they were in a position where the High Court said at one point, well, if you're going to say you accept Orthodox and not Reform, then we're going to take your authorization totally. So now they can no longer say that. So what are they saying? We don't accept any Beit Din from both sides. So halakhically what they're obligated to say is, we'll accept Orthodox conversions, but we won't accept Reform. Politically, they can't say that. So now they're stuck in the CISO. So what do? They say, we're not going to accept anyone. But they do want to accept people. They want to help people out. So then there starts being a discussion. Well, we will accept this and we will accept that. You understand that when you're contending with a political system that's trying to destroy you, and you have to react to that political system, there are innocent bystanders that get hurt. But you can't help that. You could go to the government and say, give them a visa. Help them out. They need medical insurance. And the government says, if you want me to give him a visa, no problem. Let me do the gear. You understand? There's a power struggle here. The government is constantly saying, we want to abolish the Beit Din. We want to have an open check to make anyone we want Jewish. Well, we can't do that halachically. So now sometimes in order to ensure the government doesn't do that, the Beit Din is forced into a position where they will freeze everything they do, sometimes for months on end. Then the government tries to make it the Beit Din's fault. So they'll say, the Beit Din aren't working, look at how long they aren't taking anyone in. But really, the Beit Din are doing that because their arm is being twisted by the courts and by the government. So when we look at what the Beit Din is doing, even though I agree, there are terrible occurrences, there are people that can be here without medical insurance, we have to realize that they're in a very delicate situation where from all sides they're being attacked. Whatever they do, they're being attacked. And in that situation, they're doing their best to help people as best as they can. There's one more point, which is a little bit sad. And that is that there's an argument from the other side of the fence as well. The Haredi system says, you guys are all a bunch of fakes. You're working with the government, and the government's telling you what to do. And if the government's telling you what to do, then you're not doing everything in accordance with halacha. We are halachically correct, and you are not. And the situation that exploded now is really an outgrowth of that. Because the Haredi system reached a point where they said, we're going to disqualify what you've done. The government jumped on the bandwagon, the newspapers jumped on the bandwagon, and everyone said, okay, great. So if we can find a rabbi that says we're going to disqualify the courts, what's going to be the bottom line at the end of all of this? That there will be no rabbinic court. The government will rule who becomes Jewish and who doesn't. Now, halachically, that will have no validity, but the government will have gotten what it wanted. And that's really the story that you're seeing today, in a nutshell. That a situation where the Haredi court that's always been trying to find areas, they constantly have claims against the rabbinic court, and so there are halachic issues. There are delicate issues here which the Haredi court says, you guys shouldn't have done this way, you shouldn't have done it that way. And
partly the point is, certainly Haredi rabbis came back into the national court, the national bet in last March. So they have within the state court.
So it's true, but
that's partly why it's changing. So I can understand, but if you don't solve this kind of, you don't solve it in a minute, but if you keep this system working like, okay, from left to right, you can say maybe for 5 years we don't have a bidding because we don't know what Asian wants what. But in this country where Haredim and the situation is like this, you can expect to be in another 50 years still the same because everybody's keep on blaming each other from, okay, we are Haredi, so if you work with the state, we don't work with you. So then you can also...
It's not only a question of if you work with the state. It's a problem. I agree with you, there's a problem. But there's a lot of validity to each side's claims. It's not like we could sit here on the sidelines and say they're right and they're not being fair, they're not giving in, or the other side's right and they're not fair because they're not giving in. Each side has valid claims, and they stem from true halachic sources, and it's very complicated. The fact that people are getting hurt in the process is very sad. But the real blame begins with the fact that there's a mix of religion and state. That's where the problem begins. And the fact that the government keeps trying to pull the reins from the Beit Din, which is going to be halachically invalid completely, and the Beit Din is trying to maintain whatever scraps of power so as to ensure that what's done is halachically correct. So the people who are getting caught in the middle are all the individuals and all the people, and they're the ones who we can really cry over. The people who have been cheated, the people who have been treated unfairly, and there's no one who could comfort them. A person that doesn't have medical insurance, I grant you, there's a lot of injustice that's being done here, and there's a lot of, if you want to use the word, abuse that's being done here. But I don't think it's fair to look at the system and say the rabbis are at fault when the rabbis can't do anything. They're doing the best they can to preserve whatever halachic validity still exists within their rabbinic court. And you know what? That's probably what they should do. And if you were in their shoes, that's probably what you would do too. That's what anyone would do. And it's true, they also recognize and they try. Give you another story. A few weeks ago, I met a rabbi who works on the Beit Din here in Jerusalem. And the Beit Din for conversions. And I was talking to him about something else totally, and he asked me, what do you do? I told him, I learn in Machon Meir, and I learn with people who are in the Gir program, and people who do tshuva. So he said, oh, we know Machon Meir, they have really, the guys really learn well there. So I said, yeah, I'm very impressed with the guys there, but then why do you guys give us such a hard time? So he said, what do you mean we give you such a hard time? When your students come in, we know they're good. We don't give them a hard time. They just tell us they learned by you guys, and we know they're good, that they know their stuff well. So I said, I could give you a lot of stories. Guys that get stuck in the system. So I started telling him story after story. He said, well, this story isn't the Beit Din. It's not our, we can't do anything without the authority of the state. Story after story, he told me, but that's not us. He told me, that's all the state. That's all, I also wasn't as clear as you. But story after story, he told me, whatever has to do with the Beit Din, I'm with you. Tell me, you have a problem? I'll see what we can do to clear it through. But he said, I don't think there's any issue with the state. There's an issue that a person is stuck in, let's say, Vadat Charigim. He's in the unusual cases which the government has to approve to go before the Beit Din. He said, I can't bring that before me before the government approves it. And there's no way I could rush the government. The government says, well, we have to go through it. We're not going through it yet. So there is this issue where the individuals are getting caught in the middle. I haven't seen an instance. I don't have that much experience, but in the few years that I'm here, I haven't seen an instance where the Rabbanim didn't do the maximum they could to help the guys out. I'm talking from the little bit I see behind the scenes. And it's going to the extent where we had once, we had a guy here who we didn't succeed in helping in the end, but the rabbis from the Beit Din, after they finished in the Beit Din, came down here to meet with him. he didn't have a car, they wanted to move it through, he was in a situation where his visa was expiring, and we said, how can you do this to the guy? So the rabbi from the Beit Din came down, Rav Shor, he came down here to Machon Meir to meet with the guy, to see how he could help them. And the same thing, Rav Shor did it more than once with the guys. And Rav Haftig from the Beit Din also gave me his home number and said I could come whenever I need. I've seen quite the contrary, that the rabbis are doing the maximum they can within a system that is binding their arms. It's true that there's a problem with the system.